Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Citizen Bitcoin Podcast. We are dedicated to being sovereign citizens of Bitcoin. We're here sharing our journey, learning Bitcoin, hoping it makes yours a bit easier. I'm Brady.
I'm Tommy.
And today we're going to dive into some exciting developments in Bitcoin. It's been an amazing 30 days, the last month of Bitcoin. And we're going to sort of outline the show with a wonderful tweet from our pal at the Cryptoconomy podcast, and you should check that out. He does readings of the best Bitcoin content out there every day, every weekday. So if you're one of those audiophiles like me who loves to get information and learn through the audio format, you got to subscribe to the Cryptoconomy podcast as well. Cryptoconomy put out this tweet yesterday, actually, and it got some good traction. And it lays out in a thread all of this activity that's happened in Bitcoin in the past 30 days. And we're going to read through it, and then we're going to deep dive on a couple of them, a couple of points. We're going to talk a little bit more in depth about Schnorr signatures, and we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about BetterHash, Matt Carillo's BetterHash. And then we'll get into talking a bit about personal responsibility, personal safety when it comes to securing your Bitcoin and yourself as well, based kind of kicking that off based on a tweet from Jameson Lopp. So let's dive in, Tommy.
Sounds good. I'm ready to roll.
In the past 30 days in Bitcoin, here's a list of things that have happened. All right. All Lightning Network implementations have hit beta. So the implementations of Lightning Network from Blockstream, from Lightning Labs, and from Async are all now in beta. Lightning.spin, the gambling Lightning app. Have you seen that, Tommy?
Yeah, I've seen it. It looks interesting. I don't really know enough about it to have a real position on it right now.
It goes back to recalls the app from the early days of Bitcoin, Satoshi Dice. And it's just a really simple gambling app. You spin a wheel and you pay a few Satoshis, or you win a few Satoshis, and it's all handled through your Lightning wallet. It's pretty sweet. RGB Lightning plus Bitcoin assets from Giacomo Zucco. The Liquid sidechain has been released by Blockstream. And, you know, this is the, this is what all the conspiracy theorists
right,
out there.
The Bcash.
Yeah, the Bcash are conspiracy
which
theorists.
We're not supposed to really, we don't really talk about Bcash that much anymore because it just doesn't really foot with anything.
Well, you know, they come up from time to time when you're studying Bitcoin in cases like this, of course. But yeah, of course, the Bcashers have been pointing to the Liquid sidechain idea as evidence of Blockstream's sort of conspiracy to take over Bitcoin through using sidechains. It's interesting technology and will help big businesses and banks and exchanges move large amounts of Bitcoin efficiently. So that's interesting to see out. That's out. That was released in the past month. AMP Lightning Payment Routing Research. Full privacy Wasabi Wallet. Schnorr signatures, Bitcoin improvement proposal.
Now that's actually this is a big one right
big
here.
Deal. It's been in the works for a long time. We're going to dive.
Peter's been working on it for quite a while, right? It's his proposal, right?
Yeah, he wrote the proposal and he's been working on it with some other all stars, Bitcoin developer all stars, and mathematicians and cryptographers who are not necessarily part of Bitcoin have been helping on it. So we're going to dive a bit deeper on that. The BIS chief. The International Settlement Bank has said, stop trying to create money. You kids got to stop trying to create money. You can't create money. Only governments can do that, basically, is what he's saying, which is, you know, sort of laugh my
ass
off funny.
I guess the other aspect of this as it relates to Bitcoin, the statement has nothing to do with the underlying technology and so on and so forth, right?
He has no idea what's going on.
Well, and the thing is, it's like it's his he's on top of it. BIS is Bank of International Settlements. So it's kind of like, well, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Period.
Right? Like that's his argument.
Don't do it. That's his argument.
And Saifedean Ammous calls him the final boss, which just cracks me up. All right, so...
By the way, for you, the final boss, I just learned this because I'm not a big gamer, but I guess final boss is when you're playing these video games. It's like the highest level. It's like the last stand, so to speak.
It's like Bowser in Super Mario Brothers, right? And, you know, that's actually a pretty accurate analogy, because this dude, if you've seen a picture of him, looks like Bowser.
Let's put it this way. He doesn't miss many meals, so...
No. Coinbase Custody is open for business. They launched a custody service for large amounts of Bitcoin. So if, let's say, a big hedge fund wants to get into Bitcoin, one of the things that's really been missing in the space is a professional custody service to control the Bitcoin for that hedge fund.
Well, it's absolutely missing, because I've had people ask me, you know, how does it work? You know, and if you get into somebody specifically that's new to Bitcoin, or wants to have a proportion of that in their in whatever their asset personal asset profile is in terms of their investments. If you start talking to them about putting it into a cold wallet and go through this whole thing, their eyes glaze over within like 30 seconds. They want to be able to, in quote, put it somewhere yeah. that they feel comfortable. So we'll have to see how this custody business works at Coinbase with respect to how solid that is, but it's good in yep. terms of institutional investment or very high net worth individuals.
It's still a trusted third party, which, you know, as a podcast trying to educate, you know, people out there about Bitcoin, you know, we want to try to keep people away from trusted third parties, like keeping your Bitcoin on Coinbase. You don't own your Bitcoin if you keep it on Coinbase.
Historically, and we've touched on this, and I'll just say it for just briefly, but just in terms of keeping it on an exchange, these stories where there'll be a big hack and Bitcoin will be stolen, it's just a general comment, right? And then people that are not aware of what's going on, they think that's Bitcoin's fault, where it's actually just it was put somewhere where the actual party that held it in exchange
right.
wasn't secure. It had nothing to do with the integrity of the underlying Bitcoin.
Right. But it's still an important service because, like I said, large hedge funds and you know, high net worth individuals.
Even all the point of a potentially Charles Schwab, you know what? You know, I'm just saying in terms of the universe right. of this type of thing.
Well, there was another custody service that also opened for business, Casa HODL, which is Jameson Lopp's company. And they're, you know, kind of they'll be a competitor, I think, to this Coinbase custody service, especially for high net worth individuals. And their approach is a bit more decentralized, using multi-signature. And all that stuff. So,
well, the other point is in terms of service a competitor. I mean, from an abundance, there's so much here from the size of what we're talking about here. From an abundance mindset, sure, they're going to be competitors one another, but there's plenty to go after from yep. the standpoint of this market.
Absolutely. Well, CNBC Fast Money said that Bitcoin was dead on air again. You know,
so why would any? I mean, the CNBC. What's the story with? I mean, I got rid of my cable. We got rid of our cable TV like years ago. So
yeah.
I mean, we don't even watch.
I don't have cable either. But
mainstream media nonsense. But I mean, how could anybody actually say that?
Well,
did you see that? Well, I didn't see it. But you know, I mean, the idea is
it seems to happen.
Yeah, it's just so Bitcoin is dead. Okay, it's been it's like,
right
okay,
every down cycle.
So why would anybody even watch that show? Is it just because they just want to see the ticker? Maybe it's the ticker, which makes sense.
I don't think actual Bitcoiners watch that show very much, except to make fun of it.
No, I'm just
on
talking
Twitter.
About just general investors.
But yeah, it's general public and investors. So
because if they're doing this with Bitcoin, imagine what they're doing with other type of positions.
Yeah, on the nose, exactly right. Alex Bosworth has been discussing on Twitter and writing about a low tech inbound Lightning Network capacity solution. One of the big criticisms of Lightning Network is its capacity for larger transactions, which is kind of funny because it's built for smaller transactions. And if you're going to make a large transaction, it's probably better to put it on directly on chain. But Alex Bosworth has released an idea that is perhaps a pretty simple solution for inbound capacity in Lightning Network. This is a great example of just, improvements just keep coming. you know, just on a steady pace.
And just recall for the listeners, we're going through this list and these items, just to refocus on this, this is all within the last 30 days that we're going through on this stuff. We're only partway through.
The Blue Mat, Matt Corello, has released, also a well-known kind of all-star Bitcoin developer, core developer.
This is really, we're going to talk about this a little bit more. This is really cool. This right here.
I think it's really important. Has released a proposal for the BetterHash, a BetterHash protocol called BetterHash. And it's a replacement for the protocol that mining pools use to communicate to one another. And we'll talk about how that is important. Atomic on-chain LTC to off-chain BTC swaps has happened. So on-chain Litecoin to off-chain Bitcoin swapping happened in the past 30 days.
What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so on-chain Litecoin, so Litecoin on the actual blockchain being swapped to Lightning Network BTC or some other, you know, side chain on Bitcoin network. So instead of going just from on-chain Lightning Litecoin to on-chain Bitcoin or Lightning Network.
So that's a big deal because you're
Litecoin to Lightning Network Bitcoin, right? Yeah.
So that's a
you're
big deal.
You're switching between layers. You're swapping between layers.
Well, and swapping between types of coins, right?
And types of coins, right? Atomic swaps are always swapping between two different types of coins.
Okay.
The innovation here is that they're swapping between layers. So
an additional big deal. I just want to clarify also because I wasn't sure myself. So okay, well, that's good.
So the SEC stated that Bitcoin and Ethereum are securities. I think we talked about that in a previous episode a bit. The CFTC reported that we are witnessing a technological revolution.
CTFC is Commodities Trading Futures Commission.
I think he had this transposed here. I think it's the CFTC, the Commodities Futures Trading Commission.
Commodities Futures Trading Commission, and that's a U.S. organization.
Yep. Said that we are witnessing a technological revolution with respect to Bitcoin.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah. SegWit adoption has hit 40%, so it just keeps trucking along. Cisco has unveiled some blockchain-based solutions. IBM has partnered with the Australian government for public records on the blockchain. Satoshi's.place hit the internet. We talked about that on a previous episode. I think it's going to go down in Bitcoin history as really the first Lightning application that was super popular. Pretty fun.
Popular and worked.
Yeah, absolutely works.
Proof of track record just continues to move on with Lightning.
Yep. BIP 158, the Bitcoin Improvement Proposal 158 for light client block filtering for privacy by Roast Beef. Roast Beef is one of the main developers at Lightning Labs L&D implementation. The Berlin Lightning Hack Day happened. I saw lots of activity on Twitter of all kinds of cool stuff and ideas that were coming out of the Lightning Hack Day in Germany. The Trezor Model T has been released. So this is an update, a new version of Trezor's hardware wallet has been released. CoinJoin XT and utilizing Lightning for privacy. Another way to basically make your Bitcoin less identifiable on-chain so that it can't be traced by companies like Chainalysis as easily. Blind signatures and scriptless scripts. The Dandelion Bitcoin Improvement Protocol for private propagation. There's a great crypto economy episode on Dandelion, which you should check out. Cold Card Wallet is available for sale. Another hardware wallet. There was a side channel attack on crypto libraries, but Bitcoin's libsec P256K1 was not affected. That's Peter Woola's master work right there. And it just goes on from there. That's the end of the list, but there's even more probably that's not included in this list. This is what Bitcoin does in a down cycle. It just keeps trucking.
So it's quietly marching on. And while this happens, you've got a TV show, okay, that needs ratings or whatever. So
right.
So in the last 30 days, this has all happened in the Bitcoin world, and CNBC declared Bitcoin is dead.
Right. And these down cycles are important for Bitcoin. It's an important part of Bitcoin's life cycle. when the price is going nuts and there's all kinds of activity, you know, hitting the chain and the system, the developers are really just distracted by trying to scale and trying to support this influx, you know, orders of magnitude increase in demand for Bitcoin, and can't really focus on the long term. They really just need to kind of putting out fires and issuing fixes and at all of these, you know, Bitcoin based businesses and trusted third parties and that are involved in Bitcoin, just trying to keep the thing going. So when things settle down, then core developers and all the developers working on Bitcoin at these Bitcoin based businesses are able to think longer term and do lots of important work. And this is just all rocket fuel for the next, you know, shot up the S curve. So pretty awesome. All right, we're going to dive into a couple of these things a little bit deeper. First, let's start with Peter Woolah's Bitcoin improvement proposal for
Schnorr signatures.
Schnorr signatures. Thank you. Yeah.
S-C-H-N-O-R-R.
Yeah, Schnorr signatures. So Schnorr signatures have been talked about in Bitcoin for quite a while, and this is a cryptographic signing scheme that would be an improvement over the way the original Bitcoin protocol has been dealing with cryptographic signatures. The change would lead to an estimated 25 to 30% boost in Bitcoin's transaction capacity because it's basically compressing down the signature space, so it doesn't take up as much room. Every transaction would be a little bit smaller, 25 to 30% smaller. And this is just another example of the way that Bitcoin core community has decided to scale, right? By prioritizing keeping the blocks small so that we can decentralize the operation of full nodes and therefore the, you know, P2P network governance, the peer-to-peer network governance of Bitcoin. The decentralization of the governance is the most important, right? That's what gives you the properties of censorship resistance and basically the fundamental difference between Bitcoin and any centralized money. So that's the priority. In order to make sure that the P2P governance is decentralized, we need to have smaller blocks so that people can run nodes more cheaply, right? The bigger blocks, the more expensive hardware you need, the more expensive bandwidth you need to run the system. So we can get increased capacity in the same size blocks with improvements like SegWit, with improvements like Schnorr signatures, and these just keep coming. But
these are incremental improvements that just expand what's going on in Bitcoin, right? And also, it makes Bitcoin more robust as well. So it's,
yep, absolutely. So you combine that with Mast, Taproot, and other improvements that are being worked on right now. And I think it's important to note with Schnorr, like this has been being worked on for a long time, like 6 years now. I think it's been since about 2012 that the idea was kind of first proposed.
Yep.
And there's been test implementations that have been written throughout the years and tested by other cryptographers and mathematicians who were at that point outside of the Bitcoin community, have come in to help Gregory Maxwell, Peter Woolah, and a couple of other outsiders have issued a paper in early January that have really ironed out a lot of potential problems with Schnorr signatures. Fixes have been released.
Right. And so putting this in context, we say 2012. So this has been going on for 6 years.
Right.
In terms of building off of it, right?
Which seems like a long time. Well, Bitcoin's only been around for, you know, 9.5
right.
at this point.
Well, and it goes back to when we talk about the Lindy effect and how long. But the idea is this is going on with Bitcoin as it rolls along. So you've got a situation where this is coming on and it's been 6 years when it's been tested. And then, for example, just to contrast, you have all this excitement about EOS or EOS, right?
Right.
Where they raised $4 billion, right? And they really don't even have an underlying product or anything.
Well, they released their mainnet last month or something like that, and there were all kinds of bugs. They had to come in and shut down operation of the mainnet, release a fix.
And then they have a constitution, and there's a bunch of
whatever.
Governors.
Yeah,
and just real quickly, so then
it's a mess.
So the idea is you've got this situation where you got Bitcoin. Again, I know it's just to reiterate, right? You got a situation where it started at ground zero with no money, okay,
right.
No capital behind it. And this is all going on. And while you've got all the other activity, which with other type of possibilities where it's really, if you define it, it's really more based off of capital and people trying to make money,
right,
rather than to try to improve a technology and move things along.
Right. And this recalls a Turtemeester on Twitter tweeted out a quote from Gregory Maxwell from last year during kind of the height of the scaling wars between Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash.
That's a good
right?
tweet. Yeah. Yes.
So yeah, he said it's applicable now. It already sounds like prophecy, but it is absolutely crucial as it defines one of the main differences between something like EOS or another shitcoin like that and Bitcoin.
XRP, Ripple, whatever.
So here's the quote from Gregory Maxwell. We should have patience. Bitcoin is a system that should last for all ages and power mankind for all time. 10 years from now, a couple years of dispute will seem like nothing. But the reputation we earn for stability and integrity, for being a system of money people can count on, will mean everything. If these discussions come up, they'll come up in the form of reminding people that Bitcoin isn't easily changed at a whim, even when the whims are obviously good, and how that protects it from being managed like all the competing systems of money that the world used to use were managed. So have patience, don't take shortcuts. SegWit is a good improvement, and we should respect it by knowing that it's good enough to wait for. And for however it's activated to be done the best way we know how. This is why Bitcoin is winning and will win. And it's why it's trusted. It's why it works better. The developers are not only the best, but they have this attitude of conservative attitude of patience, taking time. Snort signatures has been in the works for 6 years. And flaws have been found that have been corrected. And through all this thorough testing and thinking about it over these past 6 years, and it's just now resulted in a Bitcoin improvement proposal being released, and that means we still may be 2 years away from actually seeing snort signatures in the actual mainnet protocol. It
right.
may be two more years, but that's good. That is a very good thing. You should be very careful with changing a protocol that is running the world's money, right? Or potentially running the world's money is running money that is. Worth a network worth $120 billion, whatever it is right now, and someday maybe all money.
Well, one step at a time, but it just continues to march along.
Absolutely. So excited about Schnorr signature proposal being released. It's a big kind of milestone in the release of this improvement for Bitcoin. Another improvement proposal that was released in the past month or so is one called BetterHash. And this was released by the Blue Matt Carello. And BetterHash is a mining protocol, basically. A new way for mining to, or for miners to communicate with each other about what they're discovering and pooling their resources together. So there's a concept of mining pools in Bitcoin. And small miners over the years have been forced into these pools that aggregate a bunch of hash power so that they can have a shot in hell at getting the block reward, right, for discovering a block and adding it to the chain. So this has resulted in quite a bit of centralization of mining. And this is probably one of the most, the biggest problems I think that Bitcoin has right now, one that I would consider... I'm probably most worried about is the centralization
I think
of mining.
It's a significant issue, and as I mentioned earlier, I think this development is great in terms of this BetterHash, and hopefully that continues to work.
Yeah, so we have basically five big pools that sort of dominate Bitcoin mining right now. You have BTC.com, AntPool, BTC.top, ViaBTC, and SlushPool, and those five mining pools account for over 75% of Bitcoin mining hash power, right? So that's not great. That's pretty centralized. So what this mining protocol does is pretty genius. BetterHash, it separates out the block reward and the decision on what, like how to construct the block and what transactions go into the block. So right now, when all this hash power comes together, let's say I have a small mining operation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I join Slushpool. All of that hash power goes toward Slushpool, you know, finding that block. And then the block reward, if Slushpool finds it, gets divided up amongst all of the people who are contributing hash power to the Slushpool, mm-hmm. you know, relative to the hash power they contribute. But then there's a node that Slushpool runs, a full node that Slushpool will run that decides which transactions go into that block, right? It'll validate the transactions and construct the block and put it in there.
Sure.
And that node is running a protocol that is, you know, kind of old and not great. And so it's called Stratum. And BetterHash is a proposal to replace the Stratum protocol. The main difference is then that the actual miner, so let's say our hypothetical mining facility has the ASIC in the computer in it that discovered the block. So we discover the block, we'll still distribute all of the, you know, reward, the block reward with everyone in the slush pool. But our little hypothetical mining, you know, setup gets to actually construct the block. We don't give up that power, the actual block construction power to slush pool. Right?
Right.
So that will encourage small mining operations to run their own full nodes more, right? The more full nodes that are on the system, the more decentralized it is, exactly.
The better it is, and the help. And so just to take, and maybe I'm going off course here, but the idea is, I guess these five big pools would not want to participate in BetterHash, or would they be forced to do it? Because they don't want greater decentralization, correct?
I don't know. That's a good question. They might not. And I think it'll be, I don't know the answer to that question. It's a good thought.
Because you figure, right, if I'm one of these five big pool guys, I would say,
sure.
So then it becomes a question of just seeing how BetterHash works out, because it may be a situation where it will be able to sustain itself through all that, right?
Sure.
Because that would be my first thought. And I guess you got the concept would be with five pools, I guess oligopoly kind of, sort of, right? In terms of what's going on right now, right?
Yeah. Maybe
in terms of the mining.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, that's a good question about the, like, what...
We may have to cover that on a different show, but this is how we do the show, right? We're trying to learn right along with you all.
What incentive do the mining pools have to implement this BetterHash protocol?
From the standpoint of Stratum and trying to improve it, maybe they'll be forced to do it just because they'll go, wait a second, we better get on or we're going to be, you know, it's one of these deals where they'll be left behind. In other words, unless they get up on the curve, they'll be able to do pretty good for a while and still cash in. But unless they stay on the curve, then they'll be left behind, kind of like and as an example, I'm jumping off course a little bit here, but not totally. An example would be originally with IBM when they had mainframes,
right,
and then you switch to PCs, they missed that whole window. Now IBM's kind of changed their model and been able to come back subsequent since the decades back when that occurred, but it'd be a similar type of example potentially.
Yeah, so I'll tweet at Blue Matt and see if he has an answer to that question somewhere that I haven't yet read. So
yeah, cool.
But yeah, good question. All right, so that's BetterHash, that's Schnorr. Lots of amazing stuff going on in the Bitcoin world. It's going to be an exciting year ahead, and just seeing what happens. I think the gap between Bitcoin and every other coin out there that's trying to compete with it is just growing, and it's just, you know, it seems pretty clear that Bitcoin is the place to be.
Well, it's growing because we're all, you know, our listeners, and then, you know, we're kind of what I would use the term on it, right? But you have a situation of how people get their information and their news and all that. A lot of people think Bitcoin is, you know.
And you can capitalize on that information asymmetry.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well, absolutely.
All right. So, you know, of course, this is not investment advice and all that stuff, and you need to do your own research and invest responsibly. But, you know, the case for owning a little bit of Bitcoin right now is, is pretty strong.
So we're into let's, the long-term technology and all that, and understanding that it's important that it has value, and if the technology improves, right, most likely the value is going to improve. So
and it's also worth supporting just because it's, I think, good for society, right?
Yep.
So let's finish up today's episode talking about this tweet from Jameson Lopp.
Yeah, so he came out with a tweet yesterday in just terms of what he calls a dynamic security landscape for crypto asset owners. And so what he's done is he's started an open source repository cataloging physical attacks known against Bitcoin and crypto asset owning entities that have occurred. 23 physical attacks against crypto owners cataloged so far. 10 of them occurred in the past 6 months. Seems to be strong evidence that the rate of physical attacks is accelerating.
Which, you know, makes logical sense that physical attack would celebrate as price goes up and demand goes up. I have thought about this, you know, for sure. Being an owner of Bitcoin, although I don't own that much Bitcoin. So, you know, if you're an attacker listening to this episode, you know, probably not worth it. But it's certainly something I've worried about. And as the price continues to accelerate over the next, you know, 3, 5, 10 years, it's going to become more and more of a concern, right? And not just, like, there are safety measures you can take. You know, you can set up, have your Bitcoin in a multi-sig wallet so that you literally cannot access that Bitcoin unless you go to several different physical locations, right? And that might help you dissuade a physical attacker. You can say, like, look, I can't access my Bitcoin right now. This is what it's going to take. They might have to, like, literally kidnap you and force you to go around to wherever you're holding these private keys and bank deposit vaults or whatever wherever you're holding them. But, you know, the nightmare scenario, of course, is a family member, you know, being held hostage or something like that. What do you think, Tommy? I mean,
we brought this up just because we thought it was an interesting topic, and maybe not so much for understanding it's important from the Bitcoin part, but just from the standpoint of just generally self-awareness and physical awareness. And I bring this up from having, spending time in, if you really think about it, you spend time in a big city. Like if you're in Midtown Manhattan in New York City or in Chicago in the Loop, and there's a lot of people with zero self-awareness. And what I mean by that is they're on their phones, they have earbuds in, they're texting, they're doing whatever. Okay, so the first thing is and where I've become aware of this is a couple factors. I had a good friend of mine that visited me a couple years back, and I don't know how familiar our people, I'll just use this as an example. We were on Michigan Avenue up by the river, and we were going to take a cab, and we started walking, and my one buddy said, well, let's walk all the way down to, it's Willis Tower now, but it was Sears Tower. And he was on me because at the time, I was constantly texting, looking at my phone, and he pointed out to me, he said, listen, you should really put that in your pocket while you're on the street. And since this guy had a lot of experience in security, we walked down there, and he pointed out on the way, like, look at those two characters on the corner over there. And I didn't, it just happened to be there were a couple of people, and you could just tell they were looking to pickpocket people. And I know that's, but that was one instance. But he started pointing out, like, we cut through where there's the Daily Center, and it's also where they have a lot of activity down there. As it relates to court situations, people come out where they're upset. But the example he used was, let's say you're in a suit, four or five people come out of the building, they just got a bad judgment, something happened, and you bump into some characters, and you're going to think that, you know, hey, oh, sorry, and it's you bumped into them because it was your fault, because you're answering some type of text or confirming or getting ready to tell somebody you'll be on the conference call or getting ready to be on your phone or whatever. And you bump into them and you figure, compared to like the suburbs, you'll be able to say, you know, hey man, sorry, I didn't mean, you know, whatever. And they get in your grill and basically have at it with you, right? And it's pretty much your fault. And also, not to mention, you walk out into traffic and get hit by a car, right? So the whole idea is that, and this kind of and it just ties to the overall aspect of being self-aware. I mean, the other part,
and personal responsibility, which is an important part of Bitcoin.
Yeah, and that's the tie-in. It's just the whole idea of personal responsibility and tying that back. I guess that's the main part of it, right? And I think, was there something else I was going to? Oh yeah, the other thing I was going to cover.
Sort of the genesis of your self-awareness there, is that what led you to do Krav, Krav Maga?
Part of this is that I wanted to, and just real quickly, I wanted to get more fit. And so one of the areas was CrossFit, and then the other area was some type of combat sport or some type of martial art. But I actually did it to more or less for fitness. So somebody said I should check out Krav Maga. And it has a lot of calisthenics and stuff. And as a consequence, they also teach you certain techniques as it relates to self-defense.
Yeah, it's also one of the most self-defense-oriented combat sports, right?
And one of the big components of Krav Maga is self-awareness.
Yep.
And being aware of what's going on. And then the idea is, it's pretty much like, you know, you don't try to engage, you try to be aware enough and present yourself enough so you don't have to get involved with any of the situations. But for example, they spend sometimes a few minutes before a class explaining, like, if you go into a bar restaurant, when you go in there, do you actually look to see where's the exit in this place? Or if you go into a movie theater,
right,
what happens if all the lights go off? How the heck do I go out of there? Okay.
Right.
And these are simple things that might only take you less than a minute to think about. And I don't mean to be a weirdo about this type of thing, but it doesn't take much extra time to think that way. It's also helpful, just to go back to the example of being on the street, if you're going to take a 10-minute walk or a 5-minute walk somewhere, why the heck should you even have your phone on, right? I mean, why should you be looking at that stuff anyway in order to take in what's going on? Because there's a lot of stuff going on. It just helps your mindset. So anyway, that's
a good added benefit.
Yeah.
But yeah, follow at Lop on Twitter if you're not already. I'm sure you are. But Jameson is very conscious about security, and it's, you know, it's not like Tommy's saying, it's not something that needs to sort of like overwhelm your awareness or your life, but it is a little bit of awareness goes a long way. And however, maybe it's extremely unlikely that you'll be personally attacked over your crypto holdings, but you know, those of us who are out there publicly, you know, talking about this and who are, you know, don't have the benefits of having, you know, maybe with good foresight, kind of anonymized their online presence. You know, that's not always possible. Also, for people who are doing a lot of in person stuff, you know, like out of conferences and speaking and
right,
and on TV and things like that, right? So there's some of us who are kind of out there publicly talking about Bitcoin and trying to educate people that might make you a target over in the future. So some self awareness, some personal responsibility,
right.
And so just some kind of basic.
Well, and the other thing is that just in terms of bringing this up, first of all, we just thought it was a kind of a, in quote, fun topic to talk about, understanding it's serious, but also not knowing is a decision. In other words, if just deciding to not be aware is a decision, right? So you sit there, once you understand that there's this whole situation awareness, you can either decide to do something or just go ahead and not do anything about it, right? Well, that's a decision to go ahead and put your head. So down the road, if something happens to you, it's not like, you know, you just decided to be ignorant about it or not do anything about it, right?
Yep.
If you're, right?
Absolutely.
So that ties back to personal responsibility, which ties back to kind of the whole culture of Bitcoin.
Absolutely. All right, well, that's it for today. Thanks for joining us. You can find the podcast online at citizenbitcoin.world. In your web browser, subscribe there. You can also follow us on Twitter at Citizen Bitcoin. We have a Medium page also at Citizen Bitcoin there. Tommy is at Cannon's Call on Twitter. I'm at BSwin on Twitter if you want to follow our personal accounts. And I think that's it for this week. You have any closing thoughts, Tommy?
Thanks for your time today, and it's good to do this on a Sunday morning.
All right. Take care, everyone. See you next time.
Thank you.